Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
The Somali government welcomes a U.S. drone strike against al-Shabaab, and a British nurse recovers from an Ebola infection. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. Somalia's government has welcomed the drone strike that targeted leaders of militant group al-Shabaab. The U.S. military says it targeted al-Shabaab's number one commander, Ahmed Abdi Godane, but it's not yet confirmed whether he was killed. Abdulaziz Billow has more from Mogadishu.
Hours after the U.S. claimed responsibility for an airstrike against the al-Shabaab leadership, authorities in the capital, Mogadishu, held an urgent cabinet meeting to discuss the latest security operations. After the meeting, the officials said they welcomed the drone strike. Government spokesman Ridwan Haji Abdiweli told reporters that the government supports any operations against the militant group. Al-Shabaab has neither confirmed nor denied reports that its top leader, Abdi Ahmed Godane, was killed in the attack. If confirmed, his death will be a serious setback for Al-Shabaab. Abdulaziz Bilal for VOA, Mogadishu.
A British nurse infected with Ebola has been released from the hospital after recovering from the virus. The Royal Free London Hospital said today that William Pooley's 10 days of treatment included the experimental drug ZMapp. It was taken to a hospital last month after contracting Ebola while working in Sierra Leone. Lesotho's Prime Minister Thomas Thabane has returned to the capital of Maseru 4 days after he fled to South Africa after an apparent bid by the military to oust him. Police and government officials say the Prime Minister arrived in the country on today, guarded by South African police. Mr. Thabane fled Lesotho Saturday before the military surrounded his residence and that of a top police official and then disarmed 2 police stations in the capital. This is VOA News. U.S. President Barack Obama condemned Russia's intervention in Ukraine today as a brazen assault on the country's integrity and assured Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia that NATO would defend them against any aggression by Moscow.
First, we will defend our NATO allies, and that means every ally. In this alliance, there are no old members or new members, no junior partners or senior partners. They're just allies. Pure and simple.
The American leader spoke to a crowd of 2,000 people in a concert hall in the Estonian capital after meeting with the leaders of the 3 Baltic states that joined the U.S.-European military alliance in 2004. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin has put forward what he called an action plan for peace in eastern Ukraine amid contradictory reports on whether a ceasefire had been reached between the Ukrainian government forces and pro-Russian separatist rebels. Japanese and Philippine lawmakers in Manila signed an informal agreement today to form an international body promoting peaceful means to settle disputes in waters where they have competing claims with China. From Manila, Simone Orendine reports.
Members of the 2 congressional delegations have agreed to push for a Parliamentarians League for Maritime Security in Asia within their respective legislative bodies. They stress settling territorial disputes and clarifying claims based on international law. Japan Representative Nakada Hiroshi led 6 of his fellow party members in a visit to the Philippines. He reiterated their pitch for avoiding force or coercion in staking claims and not doing anything unilaterally that would upset the status quo. Simone Orendine for VOA News, Manila.
Pakistan's military says it has killed more than 900 militants and lost 82 soldiers since June when it launched a major counterinsurgency offensive in a volatile tribal region near the Afghan border. A military statement said today that it eliminated terrorist bases from major towns of North Waziristan, including its administrative center, Miran Shah. Half of the soldier deaths are said to have occurred in the anti-militancy offensive, while the rest in retaliatory militant attacks in elsewhere in Pakistan. 5 women have been named to Japan's new cabinet, underscoring Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's commitment to better utilizing women to help revitalize the economy. The new 18-member lineup has more female members than any Japanese cabinet since 2001. Prime Minister Abe said he wants women to make up 30% of Japan's political and business leaders. I'm Frances Alonso.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
This Ebola epidemic is the largest and most severe and most complex we have ever seen in the nearly 40-year history of this disease.
That's WHO Director General Margaret Chan briefing reporters today on the Ebola outbreak. Details next.
Also in the news, Somalia's government has welcomed the drone strike that targeted leaders of the militant group Al-Shabaab.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, U.S. President Barack Obama condemned Russia's intervention in Ukraine today as a brazen assault on the country's integrity and assured the three former Soviet satellite states that NATO would defend them against any aggression by Moscow. Mr. Obama said that Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia had lost their independence before to Moscow, but that with NATO, you will never lose it again, he said. The American leader spoke to a crowd of 2,000 people in a concert hall in the Estonian capital Tallinn after meeting with the leaders of the three Baltic states who joined the U.S.-European military alliance in 2004. Mr. Obama also spoke about the beheading of an American journalist by militants of the Islamic State, or ISIS. He called the action a horrific act of violence. A video released on the internet by the militants blames President Obama and the U.S. bombing of Iraq for the execution. Speaking to reporters today, Mr. Obama said those who killed Stephen Sotloff have failed in whatever they are trying to achieve because the United States and the world are repulsed by their barbarism and will not be intimidated.
I want to say that today the prayers of the American people are with the family of a devoted and courageous journalist, Stephen Sotloff. Overnight, our government determined that tragically, Stephen was taken from us in a horrific act of violence. We cannot even begin to imagine the agony that everyone who loves Stephen is feeling right now, especially his mother, his father, and his younger sister. So today our country grieves with them. Like Jim Foley before him, Steve's life stood in sharp contrast to those who murdered him so brutally. They make the absurd claim that they kill in the name of religion, but it was Stephen, his friends say, who deeply loved the Islamic world. His killers try to claim that they defend the oppressed, but it was Stephen who traveled across the Middle East risking his life to tell the story of Muslim men and women demanding justice and dignity. Whatever these murderers think they'll achieve by killing innocent Americans like Stephen, they have already failed. They failed because, like people around the world, Americans are repulsed by their barbarism. We will not be intimidated. Their horrific acts only unite us as a country and stiffen our resolve to take the fight against these terrorists. And those who make the mistake of harming Americans will learn that we will not forget, and that our reach is long, and that justice will be served.
After leaving Estonia, Mr. Obama joins the leaders of the 27 other NATO nations for a summit aimed at sharpening Western support for Ukraine as Kiev battles a months-long rebellion by pro-Russian separatists near the Russian border. The summit is set to focus on proposals to establish a rapid reaction NATO force capable of deploying quickly to Eastern Europe. Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko is due to attend.
Top officials of the World Health Organization are in Washington today briefing U.S. officials on the Ebola outbreaks in West Africa and the DRC. They had a teleconference to give an update on the outbreak. Dr. Margaret Chan is WHO Director General. She spoke first about the outbreak in West Africa.
This Ebola epidemic is the largest and most severe and most complex we have ever seen in the nearly 40-year history of this disease. No one, even outbreak responders, would experience, dating back to 1976 to 1995, people that were directly involved with those outbreaks, none of them have ever seen anything like it.
Dr. Chan says the death toll from Ebola continues to rise.
Now, as of this week, we are reporting 3,500 cases confirmed and probable cases in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. More than 1,900 deaths, and the outbreaks are raising ahead of the control efforts in these countries.
She says the outbreak reported in Lagos, Nigeria, is much smaller than in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. All the cases are linked to one airline passenger from Liberia. Health officials are trying to determine with whom the man may have been in contact. As for Senegal, the first Ebola case was reported on August 29th. The case involves a young man who arrived from Guinea. So far, this is the only reported Ebola case in Senegal.
Democratic Republic of Congo, this outbreak is smaller. And at this point in time, we have epidemiological evidence as well as viruses sequencing to demonstrate clearly that this is an independent outbreak. It is not a spread from West Africa to Central Africa.
The WHO Director General called on the world not to stigmatize Africa because of the Ebola outbreak. She says stigmatization has already hindered the global response by restricting transport of essential health workers, supplies, and food. Dr. Chan calls Ebola a global threat that needs a large and coordinated international response. Also briefing the media was Dr. David Nabarro, Senior UN System Coordinator for Ebola Disease. He says a 12-part response is needed to end the Ebola outbreak.
They include, firstly, efforts to strengthen communication and messaging, and indeed the mobilization of societies about the outbreak, and in particular to make sure that the information that people have is the correct information, true understanding of how you do and do not get infected. Secondly, care for people who have the infection. Impossible to control this outbreak if people who are infected cannot access good care, and also if those who provide the care are not able to do it in a way that controls the extent to which infection is passed on to others. And this does include the handling of those who do not survive, and in particular the safe and dignified disposal of their bodies.
Dr. Nabarro says the plan also includes quickly diagnosing those infected with the Ebola virus and locating those who may have been in contact with them. He warns that health care for the other diseases such as malaria in the infected countries is not functioning. That's due to the strain placed upon the system by the outbreak. He says Ebola is affecting food security.
The need to make sure that food and nutrition are not in any way impaired. Because if communities can't access food, then they will end up with nutritional challenges, which will compound their difficulties.
Dr. Nabarro also recommends better transportation, more protective gear, and many more health care personnel. The World Health Organization will bring together experts tomorrow and Friday in Geneva to discuss experimental Ebola vaccines and therapies.
Well, Yahias, a U.S. medical mission in Monrovia, Liberia, reports a third medical staff member is infected with the Ebola virus. Service in Mission, or SIM USA, released a statement that an American obstetrician working at Elwa Hospital has tested positive for the virus. The doctor, who worked in a department separate from the Ebola isolation ward, has not been identified. Dr. Kenneth Brantley was the first of three SIMS staff to be infected. He was reported to have fully recovered after receiving an experimental ZMAP therapy at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta, Georgia. A local patient who escaped from its isolation unit was forcibly returned after angry crowds surrounded him. Several health workers in the heavy yellow protection suits and a colleague wearing a Doctors Without Borders t-shirt captured the patient and drove him back to the hospital in an ambulance. In London, the Royal Free Hospital announced that a Western health worker infected with the virus has been released from a special isolation unit after being treated with the experimental ZMAP drug. William Pooley is a 29-year-old nurse who was working in Sierra Leone when he contracted the virus.
research being conducted at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine at the Yeshiva University in Israel shows promise of an antibody therapy for another deadly strain of the virus called the Sudan Ebola virus. The strain killed more than 400 people in previous outbreaks. The findings were reported in the publication called ACS Chemical Biology. In Sudan, the Minister of Health Affairs for the Darfur region recently refuted claims that a man who died in a hospital in El Jenin suffered from Ebola. El Jenin is the capital of West Darfur. Health Minister Firdaus Abdel Rahman Yusuf said the patient was diagnosed with HIV and AIDS. The Sudan news agency said the minister identified the victim as a resident of Chad.
Well, we are now 6 months into the worst Ebola epidemic in history. The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, also known by the acronym MSF, says the world is losing the battle to contain the spread of the deadly virus. During a speech yesterday in Johannesburg, South Africa, MSF International President Dr. Joanne Liu says leaders are failing to come to grips with this transnational threat. She says MSF has been ringing alarm bells for months, but the response has been too little, too late. The outbreak began 6 months ago, but was only declared a public health emergency of international concern on August 8th. James Kambaki is head of HR for MSF. From Johannesburg, he spoke with me about why international leaders need to take action now to contain the virus.
I think the situation is catastrophic. It's really bad because we still have high increase of cases, at the same time increase of deaths, and it's still spreading. The support is inadequately dangerous, which makes the outbreak completely out of control. It's almost like saying it's just a drop of the ocean. What Doctors Without Borders is currently doing is still small. We need a lot of help in order to control this outbreak. Families are broken down. The health infrastructure completely collapsed. The ordinary care that regular people should be getting is not there because people fear to go to the hospitals. Our isolation wards are completely overwhelmed. We have to turn away patients who require to be cared in this isolation ward. It is really bad, as our president spoke yesterday about. We are made now to actually build crematoriums instead of more wards that is required.
Also, Dr. Liu, in her address yesterday on the Ebola crisis, she laid out specific instructions for countries to contain the epidemic. She also prioritized these steps. So can you just briefly review some of these procedures?
I think the first thing that needs to be done is we need to set up more isolation wards. We need to scale it up. We need to put it in all hot points where patients come into a contact, because we still have about 23% recovery rate from those isolation wards. So we need more of those. Secondly, I think we need deployment of mobile laboratories to actually aid diagnostics of suspected cases so that we don't isolate those patients who are suspected together with those who are confirmed. And then we need to open up the region, because I think most governments have either canceled their flights. Airplanes have stopped going to those countries. Many countries are closing up their borders. We need to open those things so that it can actually aid deployment of more support to those particular countries. We need to build regional networks of field hospitals that could treat suspected or infected personnel, because we also have personnel who have been infected and they need also care. Those are just a few things, but I think in a nutshell, what the president was saying, that it's now beyond only medical humanitarian organizations to really do the work. We also need governments to come up with more solutions, like, for example, what she talked about yesterday was involvement of the military specifically to support with biohazard techniques, which we know that is available within the military. This could actually aid the enhancement of more people to come actually and support in controlling Ebola.
Earlier, you talked about the overall failure now of health systems in the countries in West Africa affected by Ebola, and how this failure has actually caused people to die from preventable ailments such as diarrhea, malaria. Even pregnant women with complications are not getting the health care that they need. Do you have any figures on these patients patients who are really affected by the failure of health systems due to the Ebola crisis.
We don't actually have these figures anymore because they don't come. They don't go to health facilities. So we actually don't know how many of these people actually die from those diseases that usually could have been prevented or could have been treated easily in a normal hospital setup. So I think what needs to be done is that we need international community actually to do more. It's now 6 months since the outbreak has started, and yet we are not able to control it. We need more hospitals to be brought in, more facilities to be started in those areas, so that people could be able again to trust to go to these facilities. Because if it's overcrowded, if it's not enough, if we still have those people that we are going to turn back even from Ebola, what will happen now for ordinary cases? I think what she's saying is that let's work harder for the next 3 months to put up structures that the public can actually trust, people can actually go to actually seek ordinary healthcare assistance.
That was James Kambaki, head of human resources for MSF. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa.
A new study says the growing popularity of the Western diet could help worsen climate change. As more people make meat a principal part of their diet, the authors say it will be very difficult to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. VOA's Jody Kapowa reports.
The global population is forecast to grow to over 9 billion by 2050. And as the population rises, so does the need for more food. The demand for meat is rising especially fast in many of the world's emerging economies. The Western diet has become fashionable there. Many studies have warned that the Western diet, filled with fat, sugar, and salt, is triggering more non-communicable diseases, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and obesity. But the new study, published in Nature Climate Change, considers the health of the planet, not just the body. Co-author Chris Gilligan is professor of mathematical biology at the University of Cambridge. He says much of the study focuses on how greater food production will affect land use.
Well, that's going to be one of the major problems as we go forward. That has knock-on consequences then on conservation, on biodiversity, but also on use of land for other purposes. For urbanization, for example, for energy supply and how we manage water. How do we find enough land to produce the crops for crop growth, the crops that are then used to feed animals and also regions for rearing the animals?
The study says using more land for food production carries a high price. Deforestation, for example, would result in greater carbon emissions.
First of all, we think about where is that new land for agriculture going to come from? And a lot of it is going to come from pristine forests. So as you remove those forests, you're removing trees, which are very important traps for carbon dioxide. And in deforestation, there's an increase in greenhouse gas emissions.
Gilligan says greater food production also will result in more methane being released into the atmosphere.
Increasing livestock production also involves a large amount of greenhouse gas production from the animals themselves.
Methane would also be released through the use of manure as fertilizer. The study says increased deforestation, fertilizer use, and methane from livestock are likely to cause greenhouse gas emissions from food production to increase by nearly 80%. Gilligan says what people choose to eat is a major driver behind greenhouse gas emissions.
For many people, meat does taste exciting. It tastes different. You can do lots of things with it in a culinary way, as one can with vegetables, of course. But nevertheless, there is an attraction there, an attraction in saying, well, yes, I eat a lot more meat than I used to.
The study also says that food production is a main driver of biodiversity loss and pollution. The Cambridge professor says reducing greenhouse gas emissions could involve persuading people to eat differently. But he adds it won't be easy.
There may be economic means by which this is done, for example, through a carbon tax, but that's a punitive measure and may perhaps be necessary. More preferable, however, is the notion of the nudge approach to behavior. So how do you make it attractive for people to change their dietary behavior? That is about publicity, about the health advantages, and hoping that that really induces people to change what they do.
Reducing waste during food production, he says, would go a long way toward lowering pollution.
There is a huge amount of loss of material through waste in developing countries pre-harvest and in developed countries, sadly, post-harvest. Were we able to move to a reduction in, for example, waste, that could have a significant reduction in that amount of greenhouse gas emission.
The UN Environment Program estimates one-third of the food produced for human consumption every year gets lost or wasted. That's about 1.3 billion tons of food that nobody gets to eat. The UNEP says in the U.S. alone, 30% of all food is thrown away. The study goes on to say the Western diet is characterized by an excessive consumption of food. Researchers came up with what they call an average balanced diet that would reduce pressure on the environment. It includes 2 85-gram portions of red meat and 5 eggs per week, along with a daily portion of poultry. They say it's not about being vegetarian, it's about eating sensibly while protecting the environment. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Back on the continent, Somalia's government has welcomed the drone strike that targeted leaders of militant group al-Shabaab. The U.S. military says it targeted al-Shabaab's number one commander, Ahmed Abdel Ghadani, but it's not yet confirmed whether he was killed. Abdulaziz Billo has more from Mogadishu.
Hours after the U.S. claimed responsibility for an airstrike against the al-Shabaab leadership, authorities in the capital, Mogadishu, held an urgent cabinet meeting to discuss the latest security operations. After the meeting, the officials said they welcomed the drone strike. Government spokesman Ridwan Haji Abdiweli told reporters that the government supports any operations against the militant group. He said the target of this operation were the key commanders of the al-Shabaab. Such attacks will continue, he said, because it's only the Somali government that has the authority to govern this nation and not terrorist groups like the al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab has neither confirmed nor denied reports that its top leader, Abdi Ahmed Ghadani, was killed in the attack. If confirmed, his death will be a serious setback for al-Shabaab. At least 6 people were reportedly killed in the drone strike, which took place in Sablale, an agricultural town in southern Somalia. The town is 60 kilometers from Barawe, the last remaining al-Shabaab bastion in southern Somalia and a key port for the group. African Union forces in Somalia recently launched an offensive codenamed Operation Indian Ocean. This operation is aimed at seizing ports from al-Shabaab and cutting off crucial sources of revenue. General Abdirizak Khalif Ilmi is Deputy Chief of Defense of the Somali National Army. He says that the operation will dislodge al-Shabaab from many parts of the country and return normalcy to areas they have controlled. Just as the Somali population has taken up arms against al-Shabaab, he says, we want to work together because we have the right to live like everyone else in the world and for children to live in peace and freedom. Al-Shabaab has lost control of the many cities and towns it once controlled, but still carries out major attacks in Mogadishu. It has attacked the presidential palace twice this year and killed 6 members of parliament. The U.S. government has designated Ghadani as a terrorist and 2 years ago offered up to $7 million for information that brings him to justice. Abdulaziz Bilo for VOA, Mogadishu.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.